Hello and welcome to Conduit Conversations, bringing you pioneers at the cutting edge of social change. I'm Paul Fonsale, co-founder of The Conduit, a home for people passionate about positive impact. This episode is part of a special Ralph Lauren Cancer Conversations series recorded at The Conduit. Ralph Lauren has been a leader in the fight against cancer for over 30 years, establishing the Ralph Lauren Center for Cancer Care in 2003 in New York City and partnering with the Royal Marsden in the UK to develop a world-class breast cancer research facility. Most recently, Ralph Lauren has committed to supporting the Royal Marsden Cancer Charity in establishing a research zone within a state-of-the-art facility opening in Sutton named the Oak Cancer Center. Throughout this series, we will invite people touched by cancer to share their stories. We will also be delving into the science behind cancer research, the role of technology in early detection and prevention, and how innovative collaborations in cancer research and philanthropy can achieve amazing results.
Unlike women who have the sisterhood, who talk to each other, who have incredible support networks, guys can be quite isolated because the stereotypical part of it, which is correct, is this kind of strong, silent approach. You know, we're just going to get on with it. We're fine. We're the, you know, we'll take an approach to our health. We'll put it further down the list. We'll leave it. We've got other things to do. It's not such a priority. And it's bullshit. And for us, what's been so important is to have a kind of more emotional conversation around health issues between men.
My guest today is Daniel Marks, a testicular cancer survivor and Royal Marsden patient. Starting his career with work experience for British Vogue, Daniel has worked for Donatella Versace's PR team in Milan and was head of European PR for Tommy Hilfiger before joining the communications store as partner and director in 2002. He is currently partner and chief creative officer, as well as a member of the British Fashion Council's advisory board. In 2014, Daniel co-founded the charity campaign Father and Sunday with his friend and fellow cancer survivor Jack Dyson. The initiative aims to raise awareness of all male cancers and encourage an open dialogue about men's health while raising money for the Royal Marsden Cancer Charity. Daniel, welcome.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
It's fantastic to have you here. So you discovered that you had cancer as a teenager.
I was 17. I was at school. I'm 6'4", so my body had kind of gone through God knows what sort of extraordinary changes, most of which I was not in control of. So when I noticed an unusual swelling in one of my testes, I sort of put it down to growth and growing pains and God knows what. And I definitely... I grew up in a family with three brothers, my dad, but health issues were not really a topic of conversation. Not because we avoided them or there was too much stiff upper lip going on, but it just wasn't part of the daily dialogue. And I was at school, and I remember it vividly today, and I had a hideous pain in my stomach. So I went to the school nurse and... she examined me and obviously saw that one of my testicles was considerably bigger than the other one. So she sent me home, our GP, and we went to go and see our GP. And he said, listen, the pain in your stomach is caused by this swelling. And it's obviously hit a nerve, and that's what the pain is. And we're going to go and have a look at it. We'll take you into hospital. And it could either be a twist, in which case we'll untwist it and everything will be fine, or it could be something else. But we'll see what it is and we'll let you know. So that evening, straight into hospital at Queen Mary's in Roehampton, which is where I was born. They did the operation and I woke up with one less testicle. Which as a 17-year-old, having gone through all of the changes of growing and puberty and God knows what, was a bit of a shock. It's a very English understatement. The doctor came to see me and said, listen, it wasn't a twist, it was a tumor. My parents were obviously there as well. And we've sent the tumor off for analysis, and it will either be benign or it may very well be cancerous. So you hear that word, and when you're 17, you have no experience of cancer other than your parents' friends or grandparents' friends dying of cancer. And that certainly went through my mind. I remember that first evening very, very well, when I got the results, and it was indeed cancerous. And frankly, I thought the world was coming to an end. I had incredible nursing care at Queen Mary's, and had a completely sleepless night. Thought that that was it. My time was up. And then I remember waking up the next morning and having obviously got to sleep eventually. And the doctor came to see me and said, "Right, we're going to send you to the Royal Marsden. And they will do various tests and see whether this has spread, because it could be self-contained within the testes, or it could have spread to your lymph nodes, in which case there's treatment for that." So I went off to the Royal Marsden in Sutton. As I say, I grew up in Roehampton, so it's not very far away. It's an extraordinary building that part of which looks pretty much the same as it did 30 years ago when I went there for my first trip. And I was taken in for diagnosis. They did various tests. Very coincidentally, there was an extraordinary doctor there in the radiotherapy center called Janet Husband, who happened to be the mother of a boy I was at school with. And so every pressure was exerted to be fast-tracked in terms of my results. My results came back and the cancer had spread to my lymph nodes, just at the very first stages of having spread. But that meant that I was going to have chemotherapy. I have to say that the Marsden were extraordinary. I had an amazing professor there called Alan Horwich, who's retired since, obviously, because it was such a long time ago. But he was extraordinary. And they explained that testicular cancer is one of the most treatable and curable cancers that there is, that it was an early enough stage that the cancer had been caught to make a difference, that I would go on to my chemotherapy course, which 30 years ago was obviously pretty different from how it is now. It was quite harsh and brutal at the time. At 17, you're pretty bouncy. You pick yourself up, you get on with it. And as far as I was concerned, I'd heard it was the most treatable form of cancer. So fine, let the experts get on with it. I was going to come out the other side of this. So I think really, though, it was much more challenging for my parents. I don't think you ever expect to see a child going through that. And I really only later in life have talked to them about what it was like going through that. They had an incredible network of friends around them. The hospital was very caring of them as well as of me. And I started my treatment, and it happened to be I was diagnosed at the end of the summer term, and I really only missed a term of school. So I went in, had my chemotherapy. It was horrible. It was exhausting. I lost my hair. I pretty much have no veins left in my arms because of the cannulas that were put in and the treatments that were done. So when you have to be an expert nurse to take blood from me these days. I'm sort of there's not much left in there. And I went through the treatment and came out the other side remember going to be diagnosed, going to have my final tests, and I got the all clear. And I've just had a great friend who's gone through breast cancer and has been the most extraordinary attitude to the whole thing. And I said to her, there's a very odd sensation that happens when you get to the end of your treatment, and you're luckily for me given the all clear, which is the time that you, during which you were treated, just sort of seems to collapse in on itself. And I remember walking back from my scans, being told I'd been given the all clear, going to see my parents. And in that walk, the physical walk from down a corridor in the Royal Marsden, it was almost as if I just walked in and started my treatment. The time that I was in there just completely collapsed in on itself. So I was looked after incredibly. The psychological care for a young adult at that time, young boy, 17, was not as sophisticated as it is now. And at that age, you fall between two stools. You're not a kid. You can't go onto the children's ward. You're not really a grown-up. So I ended up on an adult ward. Now you're given a choice, but then I was allocated onto an adult ward. And so I remember one guy who was in his late 20s who was being treated, but everyone else was old men dying. And your psychological resilience during that sort of context becomes pretty strong. And you are, by comparison to other people who are a lot worse off than yourself, determined to get better and get out of there. And the nursing care was extraordinary. I'm not just saying that because we're on a Royal Marsden podcast. It really is one of the most extraordinary places in the world to be looked after, and the patient care is and was incredible. And then the community care is sort of extraordinary. So I was back at the Marsden in Sutton fairly recently and had to take my team there to the cafe because there's a very particular cheese and pickle sandwich that they make that has fond memories for me. That was sort of a break in treatment. You would go and there were an amazing group of extraordinary women predominantly who were looking after the cafe, and you'd go there and that was sort of a break from treatment. Somehow this cheese and pickle sandwich became symbolic of something. And at that point, my parents, once I'd cleared my treatment, my parents, through my treatment, my parents decided that they would fundraise for the Marsden. They've always been amazingly philanthropic. They have a network of friends who are very, very generous to different charities. And obviously, this was incredibly personal for them. And so we raised money for a new scanner at the Marsden and a research library, which is still there. It's called the Marx Family Library. They wanted to call it the Daniel Marx Library, but I thought that sounded like I'd died. So we went for the Marx Family Library. It's still there, which is lovely, in a little tiny corner of Sutton. And I think it really inspired me now, 5 years ago, to start Father and Sunday and go back to the Marsden and help them raise funds and, more importantly, awareness.
Tell us a little bit about Father and Sunday, how it works, what was the inspiration, how you mobilize around it.
So in a sort of reverse of circumstances, after I'd recovered about 20 years ago, my father had prostate cancer. And it's a very unusual thing for a father to go through something that a son has already been through before. And I've got three brothers. We obviously all rallied around my father with my mum. Somehow, because I'd been through it, I think my father looked at me as a survivor to say, well, I can do this too. If my son can do it, I can do it. And I have a great friend, Jenny Dyson, whose brother Jack also had testicular cancer, and she got us together. And Jack and Jenny's father had died of cancer, and Jack and I had a supper out, and over one too many glasses of wine decided that we should use our networks and do something for male cancers, and as a tribute to his father and as a celebration of my father's survival, we thought, well, Father's Day is not really used for anything. I mean, my father endlessly jokes about the fact that Mother's Day is a big deal. Father's Day gets forgotten. So between us, we thought, well, can we use our relationships with our fathers and our own experiences to come up with something to help in the world of cancer. And I had said to Jack, I'd really like to do something again for the Royal Marsden. And so we came up with Father and Sunday. We're both in marketing, communications. Jack's a great writer. And so obviously we came up with the campaign before we came up with the substance. We sort of went for the headline first. And we developed it as Father and Sunday, Inspiring Men. So it was about inspiring men to talk to each other more about health issues, something that we're not great at. And that's not just a stereotypical take. That is genuinely, we're not good at talking about health issues. And we wanted to involve inspiring men around the world. We went to the Marsden, and they have really embraced what we're doing and helped us put together the program around which we for which we fundraise. And we were very specific. There's incredible work going on in funding, for example, the work that Ralph Lauren are doing in research. But we wanted to invest in people. And so we have two programs. One is to raise funds for the training of, for the funding of a fellowship, for the training of surgeons who operate the Da Vinci machines at the Royal Marsden. The Da Vinci machines are these robotic, incredible robotic machines that a surgeon can operate remotely on a body. And so the, if you like, the intrusion of an operation into a body is really greatly reduced. I think you lose an egg cup full of blood during the operation. It's nothing. And there are some incredible surgeons operating out of the Royal Marsden and being trained to go around the world. And so we're funding the next generation of those surgeons. And they're called as sort of the super surgeons because they're trained not by one surgeon, but by many on the Da Vinci machine. So you can, it's a bit like a sort of gaming unit in an arcade. You sit, it's the most extraordinary thing. And if anyone has the chance to go to the Marsden and become a supporter and see these machines in operation, it's extraordinary to watch and in a way beautiful to watch. So you're in an operating theater, the patient is completely covered, you can't see them. The Da Vinci machine is inserted, the arms of the Da Vinci machine open up the patient. I saw recently a prostate being removed. I'm quite squeamish, so I was quite surprised that it actually was fascinating to watch. And you sit at the dual control of this unit where the surgeon who's operating is on one side. He's in his socks. It was amusing socks that surgeons wear, I have to say. That's an insight you probably didn't expect to learn. And the trainee surgeon would sit in the other seat and can watch. It's a bit like dual controls on a car when you're learning to drive. And so we're funding the training of these young surgeons who then, the expert surgeon who might be an expert on a particular area of the body swaps out for somebody else who's an expert in another part of the body, swaps out for somebody else. And so there's one young surgeon who's looking at three of the leading experts in different fields of the body being trained by all of them, all on the same machine. And it's extraordinary. So there's one young man at the Royal Marsden who had testicular cancer, had his testes removed in the morning and was out in the afternoon having had the operation, because there's very little recovery time that's needed from, you know, there's a tiny little couple of scars that go into the body. It's extraordinary. So we're funding the training of these surgeons. We've funded three so far in the 5 years of the campaign. And then our ambition for the future is to fund the training of therapists who are particularly designed to support young men or young adults. A little bit because when I went through it, there wasn't necessarily the support. So I had a very lovely lady who came to my bedside when I was 17, which was 1988, and said, "How are you feeling, dear?" And gave me a form to fill in to tell her how I was feeling. Obviously, we're much more sophisticated in the way that we look at how important psychological care is, as well as physical care nowadays. And the Marsden has an incredible program these days, but it's always been and always stayed with me. 30 years ago, it was very different. So we're trying to fund the training of therapists specifically for young people, because your brain's in a very, very different place, and how you respond to your environment is very different. And especially now with social media and accessing everything that we can through our phones, we're trying to develop both a therapy course and a platform to really give young people access to information, proper information, support, psychological care, meditation, music, whatever it might be, so that when you wake up in your hospital bed in the Royal Marsden at 3 o'clock in the morning and you are scared, you've got somewhere to go. And that's a really important next step for us. So Father and Sunday came about as a campaign. It had the support of the Marsden. And I work in the fashion industry, in the marketing communications industry, in fashion, beauty, and lifestyle. And Jack has worked with GQ and as a writer there, and as a marketing support for various brands. And we just started to engage with our network and ask them if they would be involved. And the first supporters were the online retailer Mr. Porter. And we developed a 5-year program with them to sell blue shirts for the 2 weeks, 3 weeks running up to Father's Day. And then Olabar Brown, a men's swimwear and leisurewear company, made and has made t-shirts for us. And then we've gone, and those sell on Mr. Porter, and then we went out to the community of extraordinary celebrities, people of influence that we're lucky enough to be connected to, and asked them to wear the t-shirts. And they've been photographed by an amazing supporter of ours, a photographer who works for Vogue called Darren Garish. And he goes out in his car and he goes and photographs anybody that is happy enough to be included in the campaign. And for our 5th year, this year, we had incredible support both from GQ and Men's Health. GQ did a huge portfolio on fathers and sons, including my father's very happy to say that it was us and the Schwarzeneggers and other people. So he's got a copy of that in his office that he happily shows to people. That had huge impact. The Sun newspaper picked up on it, so we did interviews with The Sun. So there was really a kind of extraordinary swelling of support, a kind of culmination, if you like, of 5 years. And by the way, we've got a long way to go. With this incredible campaign, we've done some work with the World Record Egg. I don't know if you saw that or remember that. And they produced some content for us, which was incredible. And I think when we set out to do this, Jack and I said, listen, if we can make a difference to one person, then it's been worthwhile. I know that sounds like the most hideous cliche, but you sort of want to know that you've had impact. Great, we've been lucky. People have been very generous. We've raised money for the Marsden. They know how to spend it. But you really, I suppose for us, it was more about getting men to talk to each other about health issues. And I remember in the second year of the campaign, a friend said they were at with a group of guys, and they had prostate cancer, and they were talking about prostate cancer to this group of men. And at the end of the talk, this very quiet guy from the back of the room came up to see my friend and said, this has made a massive impact on me because you've been talking about your illness. And not only that, but I've read this article this weekend in the Sunday Times about this campaign, Father and Sunday. And a year ago, my son died. And I haven't been able to dig myself out of the grief. And I feel like this campaign and you are a message from my son to tell me to get off my ass and do something. Now, when you hear something like that, first of all, we were in floods of tears when we heard it initially, and it's just so meaningful. It is incredibly inspiring. It makes you keep going. It keeps you excited about the campaign. And you know, that's somebody who gave us feedback, and you wonder, there are plenty of people out there who've probably seen this who haven't. And so I think from our perspective, the Marsden, supporting the Marsden is absolutely vital. Getting guys to talk to each other about health issues is even more so. And I think one of the most significant moments for me was talking to my father about it before we launched the campaign. And I said, you know, Dad, if we're going to go into this, you and I have got to have a really open conversation about our illnesses and what we went through. And, you know, how did you know that you had prostate cancer or something was wrong? And we were in the back of a cab and he said to me, all right, do you really want to know? And I said, yes. And he said, okay, well, I was walking with your mom down the street and I really needed to pee, like then and there. There was absolutely no chance I was going to make it to a loo. I had to go there and then, so I ended up peeing on the, you know, in the side of a street. And that was unusual. And not only that, but I found that I wasn't able to maintain an erection. Now, that's not really a conversation you expect to have with your dad. But it's very, very, very helpful to guys out there, because ED is pretty common amongst middle-aged men and there's nothing to be ashamed about it. But it is something that you need to go to see your doctor about, because it could be the sign of something else. And it's a very obvious physical sign that affects a lot of guys and is easy to detect and see. So for me, and I said to him, I was kind of blown away by his openness. And I said to him, you know, can I tell that story? And he said, you have to tell it. Because if you don't, somebody's going to be out there experiencing the same symptoms and probably pushing them to one side or just addressing the erectile dysfunction issues, and maybe it's something more sinister. And that type of open dialogue between men, first of all, kind of how brave of my dad to say that, it's extraordinary, especially his generation. He's in his late 80s. And there are plenty of guys out there who aren't prepared to do that. And I think part of the campaign for us, and why it's about called Inspiring Men as well as Father and Sunday, is that there's this really stereotypical view that guys can only communicate in a sort of laddie way. And certainly when we started the campaign 5 years ago, that it was all backslapping and down the pub and, you know, sticking a finger up your ass to check your prostate and all this kind of quite pub culture-y, stereotypical guys. Most of my male friends are not like that. And I think most guys out there are not like that, genuinely. And unlike women who have the sisterhood, who talk to each other, who have incredible support networks, guys can be quite isolated, because the stereotypical part of it, which is correct, is this kind of strong, silent approach. You know, we're just going to get on with it. We're fine. We're the, you know, we'll take an approach to our health, we'll put it further down the list, we'll leave it, we've got other things to do, it's not such a priority, and it's bullshit. And for us, what's been so important is to have a kind of more emotional conversation around health issues between men. I'm not feeling well, do something about it. I'm not sure this, you know, if you have a gut that something's not, a gut reaction that something's not right, it probably isn't. And that's what doctors are there for. You have an open dialogue. Please don't diagnose yourself online, but go to your doctor, go to your GP. And yeah, I'm pretty lucky. I got there early, but I got there early because of a physical symptom of what happened to me, not because I was brave enough to go on my own. And for Jack and I think the real thing is that dialogue. It's certainly one we've had between us, you know, about what it's like to have one testicle, and there's plenty of humor in that too. I've actually had a false one put in, so that, because I didn't really want the physical reminder every day of what I'd been through. Jack hasn't done that yet, but he is the father of two amazing girls and stepfather to a great son. And so, you know, there's been nothing to prevent him having a family. I do remember when I haven't got kids, but I remember when I was being treated, there was one really funny moment where this very strange woman appeared by the side of my bed and said, oh, hello. I said, hello. And she said, oh, hello. I'm the tissue collector. I said, pardon? She said, yes, no, I'm here to collect your sperm before you start treatment so we can store it in case you ever want to have children. So somewhere at the Royal Marsden, there's some swimmers of mine I haven't needed them, but hopefully that, you know, if ever I did or anyone wants to reproduce me in some way in the future, if anyone thinks that's a good idea, probably not, you know, they're there. But I think we've had this very open dialogue, and it's as soon as you meet somebody who's going through cancer for the first time, there's a sort of no bullshit approach to the conversation. But for us, it shouldn't have to get to that point. You know, prevention is so much easier. You just take care of yourself. You can, if it's testicular cancer, you can really easily examine yourself. You're in the bath or the shower after you've had been exposed to the hot water. Your testicles are sort of a bit softer and more malleable. You just have to roll them around in your hands and your fingers, and if there are any lumps or bumps, you check them out. It's really straightforward. You can do it in the morning when you're having a shower, in the evening if you're having a bath. It takes 2 seconds, and if there's something there that you're not sure about, get it checked out.
That is such a wonderful both manifesto and soliloquy on fatherhood, on sons, on health, on an inventive campaign that, you know, in its fifth year must have generated millions of views, inspired a similar number of conversations. So I wanted to ask, what are the ways in which you crack that code? Because you're correct that men are terrible in opening up, stereotypically terrible at it. And since these sorts of questions also go to issues of virility and manhood, it's even harder to get men to open up on this question. So if there's a father and a son out there, either of whom is inclined to start a conversation with their dad, stroke their son respectively, and doesn't really know how to start that conversation, what would your advice be? How do you kick it off? Because I guess once you start, it's easier, but that first step can be intimidating and feel, you know, like a big step for clammed up, you know, emotionally shriveled men.
I don't think we're all emotionally shriveled. I mean, I'd like to give us some credit.
No, I agree. But I like the stereotype.
Joking apart, yeah. I think that there's always someone in your life, at least I hope there would always be someone in your life that you could trust and have conversations with, whether that's a friend, whether that's a sister, whether that is a great doctor, whether that is, I don't know, guys that you play sports with. And the best way of starting that conversation is, I don't know how to start this conversation, but. And for me, I think that there are also telephones, lines that you can ring. There's Samaritans, there's the Royal Marsden. If you're not sure about something, you can find many places to find support. But I think really importantly, it has to be voice to voice. This isn't a social media conversation. I mean, you could start it off by WhatsApping a friend saying, I'm really worried about something. Can I talk to you about it? Why not? But, you know, you want to hear someone's voice on the other end of a phone. And I think that it's becoming more and more high profile for people to talk about psychological issues and concerns and worries that may be linked to health. Obviously, His Royal Highness the Duke of Cambridge is the president of the Royal Marsden, and he has done an extraordinary job in raising awareness around mental health issues very publicly, both him and his brother. And I think when you see figureheads like that openly talking about the psychological challenges of living their lives, what's to stop you having that conversation? It's not going to make you less than in anyone's eyes. You know, in a way, I think masculinity is defined by transparency, openness, vulnerability, and not by muscles and bravado and some sort of strange caveman mentality. Just we don't need it anymore. And I think that there are more areas that you can talk about these things than you think, and more people who are open to support than you think. And I remember very specifically when I was 17, you know, it really brought out my friends. When you're 17, you've got a group of people around you, some of whom you kind of collected because they're cool, or some of them you've kind of desperately become friends with because they're the rugby guy at school, or but your genuine friendships come to the surface. So you'd be surprised. There are people who are within your circle of friends, not very far away from you, who could be your greatest supporters. And there are really close friends who will surprise you by running a mile. And that's perfectly fine. You know, it's everyone has different ways of coping and approaching, and you mustn't hold it against people. But if you can start a dialogue with someone, if the first person you talk to doesn't want to know, there'll be someone around the corner who will.
Daniel Marks, that was a remarkable conversation. It required no more than three prompts. For anybody who wants to know more about Father and Sunday, I presume that this is something that is easily Googleable.
Yeah, it's fatherandsunday.com. We'll give you everything on the website. We're at Father and Sunday on social media, on Instagram. And obviously you can go to the Royal Marsden to find out anything you might want about them and the campaigns that they run. And we will be active again in the weeks running up to Father's Day 2020, our sixth year.
Thank you for your courage. Thank you for your inspiration. Thank you for your creativity. And on behalf of fathers and sons everywhere, thank you for your sensitivity in treating something that is solvable and preventable, and also may build deep relationships between fathers and sons on conversations that are deeply necessary to have. So thank you for joining me.
It's an absolute pleasure. I hope it's beyond fathers and sons to anybody out there that might be thinking about this or worried about something. We're about inspiring men just to talk more openly. Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Ralph Lauren Cancer Conversation series, recorded at The Conduit. Feel free to subscribe. This podcast is available on all major podcast platforms. For more information on The Conduit and our community of changemakers, please visit theconduit.com. To learn more about the Pink Pony 2019 campaign, Ralph Lauren's global initiative in the fight against cancer, visit ralphlauren.co.uk/pinkpony. And to learn more about the Royal Marsden Cancer Charity, visit royalmarsden.org.